Clinker Factor, the cement industry podcast.
Welcome to the Clinker Factor, a podcast from WCA, which looks at the cement industry's response to climate change around the world and other topics of interest. I'm Ian Riley, CEO of WCA, and your host on the Clinker Factor. And today I'm talking to Fuad Kamoun, who is the Director of Sales for the Near East, Middle East, and Central Asia for ThyssenKrupp. And this region actually includes everything from Turkey to India, so a very large swathe of the cement world. So Fuad, welcome. And perhaps we could kick it off by asking you to introduce yourself and how you came to be working in the cement industry.
Yes, thank you very much, Ian, for hosting me here. So my name is Fuad Kamoun. I originally come from Lebanon and now living in Germany. So after studying electrical engineering in Lebanon, I moved to Germany, did my master's here in business and engineering management, and then joined ThyssenKrupp Polysius. And I've been with Polysius ever since. So since 18 years working here, went through different departments. So first in service, then sales for service, and in the meantime, in business development and sales for new build projects.
So in that time that you've been involved in the cement industry, of course, the industry has changed quite a lot. And today, in a lot of the world, decarbonization is such a big topic, although, of course, efficiency and costs are still a big topic, too. So I'm sure in that period of time, and particularly the last few years, you must have seen a lot of changes in ThyssenKrupp as the company responds to the changes in the cement industry. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about how ThyssenKrupp has changed.
Yes, actually, the good thing about ThyssenKrupp Polysius is that we have been accompanying the cement industry with our research and development for quite a while now. And as you know, decarbonization has been started and still at the front in Europe. And we have had the luck to develop many products and find solutions for the issues the European cement producers have been having towards decarbonization. And through all these corporations, we have been able to develop different products, so what we call green solutions. And what we definitely see is that our focus and our business is changing towards mostly these products. We actually, at the moment, differentiate between conventional cement production and, let's say, green projects or green cement production, which means, let's say, project having decarbonization.
Yeah, so I think with the cement industry, of course, there's been a lot of concern about the impact of carbon regulation and carbon pricing on the cement industry. And I remember when I worked for Holcim, we were concerned sort of 10, 15 years ago on the impact that would have on profitability. But actually, what we've seen is that the areas of the world that are, let's say, most advanced in terms of regulating carbon, I mean, particularly in Europe, have the best profitability at the moment, which perhaps says that this is more of an opportunity for the industry than it is a threat. And certainly for equipment producers, I think it must be quite an exciting time because there's, in addition to a lot of new technologies, there's also the expectation that cement companies are going to have to invest quite heavily to make the transition to decarbonized production. So is that something you're seeing? It must be an exciting time to be in the field.
Definitely. So it's very exciting because, as you know, all kinds of new technologies are being tested. The different big players, Holcim, Heidelberg, they're testing different new technologies everywhere. So it's exciting on one hand to see, did we really bet on the right direction, the right technologies? We have been developing different technologies lately, and it's exciting to see whether these technologies will be the one which will be mostly adopted or not, yeah? Or actually, which ones will be the ones which will be used mostly after this decarbonization wave going on.
Right. So let's get to the technologies in a minute. But before we do, let me ask you a little bit about what you're seeing in your part of the world. So as I mentioned earlier, you cover a vast swathe of Asia. What are you seeing there? I think there's a lot of change that you're seeing in your markets.
Yes, it's also exciting times for these markets, for sure. On one hand, you see a really large push for decarbonization. Yeah, so many projects, even from the authorities, were located carbon cement is being required on the one hand. Also, you know, all these countries are seeing the efforts on CO2 emission reductions in Europe and other countries. So they also would like to emulate that as well on one hand. So they're pushing for that. On the other hand, it's quite difficult for the cement producers because still they're not being able to make sure that the authorities force a certain, you know, premium for a green cement product, but they have to invest and maybe heavily, let's say. But it's really interesting to see that everyone is concerned and is trying to understand the different technologies which are there and what they would go for. But in many, many discussions, you feel that the cement producers are really under pressure because looking at the future, they need to decarbonize. They want to decarbonize, but it's not so easy because they also need, you know, the economical background for that. They need incentives or the authorities being, you know, helpful on imposing certain the norms. And in the region, this is everywhere the same. It's not so easy for the cement producer.
Yeah, no, I think we've seen very clearly, on the one hand, the example that we see around the world since probably 1999 or the year 2000, after the CSI was founded, then you start to see a lot of efforts by cement companies to reduce the CO2 per ton of cement using those traditional levers of energy efficiency, fuel switching, and clinker factor. But the things that got done save money as well as saving carbon, right? And when you want to go beyond that to the things that save carbon but cost money, you can only do that if the incentives are in place. Otherwise, you drive yourself out of business because the, you know, carbon is such a big part of cement production. So I think, you know, we've seen in Europe that it took quite a long time before the ETS really had an impact on the behavior of or the choices that companies were making in Europe. And now I don't know if we call it a rush, but there's certainly a lot of activity in CCS. But it's because it makes very clear financial sense today, not just based on today's carbon prices, but the expectation for the future. I wonder where in your patch you're seeing the most, what should we say, the most progress in terms of regulation that will drive that change?
Yeah, so first I'd like to add to what you're saying that definitely at the moment in my region, producers are looking at the low-hanging fruits, looking at trying to reduce costs and at the same time reduce their CO2 footprint. And I think this is logical. It was the same in Europe. And as you said, it took a very long time until not only about cost, but also about reduction of CO2 emissions. And I'm happy we're there now. And I think the path will be the same in the Middle East and around it, that people will start first seeing what can they do, you know, rather quickly and to reduce their costs and still be economical or reaching a good cement price. At the same time, they are pushing for the authorities to make way for not only CEM1, but other types of cements and open up the cement. I haven't seen in the region a certain, let's say, country which has made a big jump in terms of norms. But Turkey, definitely, there a lot is happening. They are trying different types of cements, of SCMs. I also see in Saudi Arabia through these giga projects who are requesting as much as possible low carbon cement, that there it is preferred. Yeah. So there is some movement there.
Yeah, I think in the case of Turkey, North Africa, maybe a little bit in Saudi as well, the CBAM will have some influence. And obviously, there's quite a long phase in terms of the taxes. But if you're in Turkey, then the Turkish government probably prefers to collect its own carbon taxes rather than let the EU collect the carbon taxes. So I think it's quite interesting to watch that over the next few years as to whether the impact of CBAM is that it gradually spreads the use of carbon pricing. I think let's turn now to the technologies a little bit. And ThyssenKrupp has been one of the leaders in the oxyfuel field. But perhaps you could give us, from your perspective, a kind of sketch of what you see happening at the moment in CCS and the different technologies that are under consideration. From my perspective, it seems that although MEA is the technology that we've seen go farthest, I think there seems to be a lot of question as to whether that's really what will be, if you like, the winner or the predominant technology longer term. And we hear about a lot of different flavors of oxyfuel. So from ThyssenKrupp's perspective, perhaps you could give us a sketch of what you see going on.
Yeah, well, as towards Europe, there are multiple technologies being tested in terms of CCS. So what we are concentrating on is, let me put it this way. You have, of course, the possibility to have a tail end solution. So to have a CO2 capture using a conventional production line, and this is being installed and tested multiple projects in Brevik in Germany, as well in Beckum. And so there, I think we will see how these technologies will help the producers. I think they will definitely work. The question is how economical they will be moving forward. And of course, this is a solution if you have a conventional line existing, and you don't want to build a new line. Our pure oxyfuel solution, the Polysis pure oxyfuel solution, is a solution for complete lines, yeah, so a greenfield plant. Basically, the idea is to concentrate the CO2. So instead of having, like in a conventional stack, 30% of CO2, you have around 90%. And so its extraction using the CCU unit is much more efficient. So you don't need that large system in order to extract that much CO2. So in general, we have designed the cement process in order to make sure that the system behind it to extract the CO2 is the most efficient possible. This is, of course, a good solution if the customer is building a new line for whatever reason.
In the case of a new line, would you be able to, for example, reduce the dimensions of the kiln and the ducts and so forth because you're not carrying the air around? Is that one of the advantages of this technology?
Definitely. So in comparison to a conventional system, you need it to be airtight because you're injecting oxygen. And so the whole system has to be airtight. And that's why the size of, let's say, the preheater of all the equipment is smaller, so approximately 40% smaller. So this means that actually the construction footprint of the line will be smaller for the same capacity or production amount for a conventional line. The lines will be also more compact because they have to be airtight. Of course, you need the infrastructure behind that, and this is what we are seeing in many of the projects coming up. So as you know, we have a pilot plant in Germany, a project called CI4C. This will come into operation towards end of this year. But we also have already multiple other projects which are funded by the European fund, and where we already have also engineering contracts with the customer. So one of them is in the north of Germany. The project is called Westküste 100, where actually maybe this is the future of cement plants. It's a cement plant integrated in a, let's say, petrochemical complex. So there's an electrolyzer furnishing the oxygen for the pure oxyfuel system, and the CO2 is used to produce methanol. And in the end, there will be an e-fuel which will be produced for the Hamburg airport.
Yes, I think it's very interesting because that's an example really of a transformation of the industry rather than just decarbonization. It's really the integration of cement with petrochemicals there, where obviously the petrochemicals are looking for post-fossil carbon. And now we might argue as to whether limestone is really fossil-free, but that perhaps is a debate for another time. But it's a very interesting integration of the two industries, which you could see, at least in some cases, might be a very attractive solution. And of course, this does raise the question, I think, of what the industry footprint is going to look like in 30 years' time or as the transition goes through. Other than these, the pure oxyfuel, what are the other flavors of oxyfuel that you're looking at or that your customers are looking at?
Like you rightly said, this could be where the landscape of cement plants is developing. On the other hand, definitely not everywhere there will be the possibility to invest in such new build projects, or maybe the cement plant is already next to CCU facility or next to a petrochemical facility. And also this depends on the amount of CO2 which will be used after that. So definitely this will not be the only development which will be happening there. So what we think will also happen is that in for some cases or some countries, that we will be modifying existing lines to the oxyfuel process. So they will not be able to extract 90% of CO2, but less, maybe around 10-15% less, using, for example, a separate oxyfuel calciner. Actually, this will become soon reality. We just signed an MOU with Taiwan Cement regarding this technology. So the first pilot plant is coming up, and we think this will be used in multiple locations for sure.
And this is just capturing CO2 from the calciner, or did I misunderstand that?
So it's actually injecting oxygen in a separate calciner and then extracting CO2.
But the kiln remains as is.
So there will be some modifications on the kiln, but in general, yes, this is the general picture. Yeah.
And does that system capture CO2 from the kiln and from the new calciner?
Yes.
Okay. So you're still able to capture the majority of CO2 that's emitted from the plant?
Yeah, exactly so.
And do you think that the concentration of CO2 with such a system will be slightly lower than with the pure oxy-fuel? Is that right?
Yes, correct. It will be lower, and I think this will be the question in the future for certain plants. How much do I need? I really need to capture, and this will depend on for what the CO2 will be used.
Yes. So if you're putting it into storage at the moment, I think you need quite a high percentage, right? Is it? And this is to do with the liquefaction and the energy to transport. If I've got that right.
First, you need to see, okay, how much do I need to extract, and then how pure it should be, because it needs to be purified. And energy or power is another story. Of course, you need a lot of power to be able to extract the CO2 on one hand, but also to purify it. And then there's the transport as well.
Yes.
But like I said, this will depend on the infrastructure after that. But what I'm saying now, it's also a bit theoretical. We haven't seen it yet. But for example, in this project in north of Germany, so many companies are working on that, and it looks like the solutions are there and will work as expected.
Let's go on to talking about another field which is getting a lot of attention at the moment, and that's the use of the additional use of SCMs. Obviously, SCMs have been used for a very long time, but I think we're seeing a pressure now, not only in terms of reducing CO2 of cement, but also pressure on our end users, the developers, who are beginning to get measured and set targets on the carbon footprint of their buildings. So they're also looking at what they can do. And I think typically buildings, you're looking at 35% of CO2 footprint coming from concrete, and maybe another 30 from steel. So this is really the two things that need the need to be addressed. You've been Palicius, you've been working on calcined clay. And I think you have a flash calciner solution. Perhaps we could start on calcined clay, and then we can also touch on more recent development with your mecha clay. So with the LC3 and the calcined clay, is this something that you now see projects spreading around the world, or is it still concentrated in specific geographies?
Actually, the last year we have really a run on inquiries for activated clay and LC3. Our laboratory in Beckum. So in our research and development center, where we can test different types of clay and check if they can be used for production later of activated clay or LC3. Our laboratory is completely full. We have barely capacities because we have really such a run on activated clays. And this is continuing. So I've been to a conference in Dubai, the Semtech, lately. And I think 80% of the discussions were about activated clay, so the interest is quite high. I think it's a very good thing, because I mean SCMs are coming definitely and will be increasing, and with activated clay, calcined clay, you can produce it in large amounts, so you can really compensate or reduce the clinker factor quite nicely. Of course, you need the good clay. Yeah, you need access to good clay, but if it's there, then definitely people are moving in that direction.
But just to talk a moment about good clay, I think that, the main requirement is on the percentage of kaolinite, and perhaps also there's a concern about color, which of course technically maybe is not so relevant, but it makes a big difference to customers, because customers also always think if it changes color, it must be worse, right? So different customers in different parts of the world have different ideas about what good is, but if you give them something else, then definitely not happy with it.
But believe me, the issue of color, it's worldwide. Everyone
Yes.
wants black clinker.
Well, no, not everyone. I can assure you there are places that want pink clinker, but the point is they have an expectation of a particular color, and if it changes, they're not happy.
Okay.
usually, as you say, it's dark, but not always. Yeah. So, but this is something that you have a way of addressing, right? I think in terms of the way that the process operates and the oxidization of the clay.
Yes, so for sure the kaolin content is very important. So what we usually do is we test the kaolinite content, and after checking that, we also have to check if the material is not too hard, because clay with high kaolinite could be very hard, and then you cannot use it. And then definitely, exactly what you said, we have to test regarding color control. Things are developing there quite well, and we have our reference in Cameroon, so 700 TPD plant,
mm-hmm.
which is running now, running smoothly, color is good, and we have our next plant, which will be commissioned in Ghana. But all the tests were quite positive, so we're optimistic there. There is a solution, let's say, but we need to check it.
And are there parts of the world that you think will not have the right type of clay? Or is this something that you see as being very widely distributed?
Actually, we have seen that there is clay which is not really usable. And, there are some geological maps. You can see some materials. And in some parts of the world, you most probably this clay is not present. So there will be parts of the world which will not have good clay to calcine.
So, I mean, I think actually this brings us to an issue of the localization of SCM. So, historically, we've tended to use fly ash and slag, blast furnace slag, as being the main SCMs. And obviously, they're related to industrial processes, the byproducts of industrial processes. There's been a lot of work that companies have done on a whole variety of different sources of materials. So steel slags, and industrial revolution era slags, tailings from various different types of metal mines and so forth. And I think one of the things that suggests is that we might be more localized in the sourcing of SCMs, and that, obviously, if you're in a volcanic area, you can look at natural pozzolans. If you're in an area that has good clays, then that's a source. And one of the things that I think will also make a difference here is, historically in the cement industry, we've really only looked at scope one emissions. And you mentioned earlier about the connection or the pressure that we're now seeing from government projects to use lower carbon concretes. And of course, once you talk to construction companies, then they're not talking about scope one, they're talking about scope three. And when you include scope three, you're including transportation. And when if you move fly ash from India to Europe, then you're going to have a big carbon footprint associated with the transportation. So I think this is going to tend to push us towards using local materials in almost every market around the world. Is this something that you've also seen in terms of the thinking of cement companies?
Actually, I think what's happening is that also the construction companies have a big role to play now. Like you said, the construction companies have also now pressure to put the low carbon cement into use, or even to come up with the low carbon concrete. Yeah? So definitely construction companies are now an additional player here who are really looking at SCMs much more than earlier on. So, and this is what we also see, that developments of SCMs to be mixed with cement, so from concrete, is increasing. So we see a big development there. And we see that construction companies are also, trying to convince cement producers to produce a low carbon cement, especially because of the scope three issue you were talking about. So they also need to move. And I think this is quite good for the industry, because the customers of our customers are also pushing in that direction. So SCMs have definitely a big part to play in the future. Maybe one point to what you just said before, that definitely what's happening is that in each country, there's a local lookout for new SCMs which can be used. In my region, we see still more the conventional way, so looking at slag, but I'm sure this will come the last few years as well.
So one of the one of the good things with the LC3 concept is it's using clay as a widely available raw material, which is a prerequisite for any sort of at scale solution. But of course, it still requires quite a lot of fuel consumption to calcine the clay. So you also have an interesting new product called Mecha Clay. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so I'll try to tell you what I can disclose. So like you said, it's called Mecha Clay. So ME for mechanical and CA for chemical. So it's actually mechanical chemical activation of the clay, so not using calcination. So practically the clay is inputted into a special mill where this mechanochemical activation happens. And maybe to put it in a simple way, you know, when you activate clay, you use heat or you calcine it. In this process, it's actually using power of the mill, so higher power, in order to make this process happen. And yeah, we're really very, very excited. This is a cooperation with Schwenk Cement. And yeah, the pilot plant was just signed. So we're really excited about that, because imagine activating clay without a flash calciner or calcination. Yeah, this could be quite interesting for the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. So making use of a widely available raw material without the need to have calcination, you know, clearly has some very attractive characteristics. So we'll look forward to hearing more about that word when you are able to disclose more. What's the timeline on that, on the project? When do you expect to have something that is commercially available?
This is the pilot project. We have been doing a lot of tests in the past year. So we have tested a lot. So we're very confident it will work well, and it should run in about 1.5 years. It should be commissioned. And then we'll enter commercial. So yeah, we need to be a bit patient until then, but yeah, it's quite interesting.
Okay, well, good. No, very interesting to talk about this. And this topic of SCMs is one that we'll be talking about at the WCA conference in Nanjing on May the 18th. So I hope that many of our listeners will be able to come and hear more about it. Fouad, it's been wonderful speaking to you today. Very interesting tour of what's going on in terms of technology and the response of both the cement industry and the equipment industry in response to the challenges that we face from climate change. And many thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm very much for hosting me. And I'd also like to encourage the listeners to go to the WCA conference. I really enjoyed it the past 2 years. It's a very nice format. I really like, you know, the touch of panel discussions you have put in there. Also, the setup quite compact and makes things quite interactive. Also, from my side, I hope many of the listeners will be joining as well.
Well, many thanks. Thanks for listening to the Clinker Factor podcast today. If you've enjoyed it, do subscribe, and please recommend us to friends and colleagues and anyone else who you think would be interested in what's happening in the cement and concrete industry around the world. WCA is a not-for-profit company. Please visit our website to see the services that we offer